This portion of the show is brought to you by Sportsman's Bar and Grill.
This is the Jeff Horovitz Show.
I think I overloaded the schedule today. Mark Howitt's here with me. We've got Dr. Bill Noonan coming up. Save the Cultural Park Committee. This is the homeless issue in Sedona, where they're making that homeless encampment. So he's going to talk with us as well.
It's this a funny, interesting one. We'll get to that. But
yeah,
the cultural park is not an active cultural park. It was a dilapidated park that's out of use that the city bought. It's basically a falling down stage with a parking lot.
Okay, they bought it for $20+ million.
It's a lot of acreage.
Yeah, it's a lot of acreage. Well, what do you best use apparently is park a bunch of cars and make a homeless encampment. Anyway, yes. He's referring us to the ballot, right? Because I guess this guy left the Northwest somewhere. I don't know if it was Portland or whatever. We'll get it from him. And he left because of these issues, and then he winds up in Sedona a couple of years ago, and then all of a sudden, boom. It's just maybe it's him, maybe it's following.
We'll so the problem is in Sedona, there's no workforce housing because everything's too expensive. And Camp Verde and especially Cottonwood was the workforce housing. Mm-hmm. It's gotten too expensive.
It's gone up.
And so people are living in their cars to work in the restaurants, you know, your cooks, your waiters, whatever. And so that you can't camp in the city. So they're saying, let's make, for people who actually have jobs, let's make a place where they can park and camp.
Okay. I mean, but we've seen the issues like the zone where the best of intentions turn out to be an absolute disaster.
Right.
And I just fear that that's what's going to happen with this thing. And I think that's what, I don't put words in his mouth, but I think that's what Dr. Noonan thinks as well.
Yeah, so I talked to the city planner about this, and there would be rules. You actually have to show employment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be like the zone.
Okay.
And we see a similar situation in Moab. Same thing, you know. Companies have gone in and bought all the residential houses, turned them into VRBOs. And I'm not against VRBOs, short-term rentals. I have one. But I am against corporations coming in and buying homes to turn them into VRBOs, Airbnbs. Because why does a big corporation need to be in a residential neighborhood like that? So that's happened.
Yeah. That's a slippery slope, though, because me and you have talked about that. Yeah. It's like a lot of people like you and me hold their rental properties in a corporate structure.
Right.
So where do you draw that line? Right. Yeah. So you can all of a sudden say, oh, no, you can't own that because it's Mark Howitt LLC or whatever.
Right.
Right? So that's
it's an issue.
It's not an easy. Well, let's find out from him in just a little bit. And then I think we got Glenn Least in the second half of the show with a market update because, wow.
Yeah, I'm interested in talking to Glenn about this because the Republicans keep saying the market's down. The market has not been down. It's been going up. And up and up. It hit 39,000.
It's going crazy.
It's going
what
nuts.
It is if you adjust it for inflation, though. Like, is it really that?
It's probably like 8,000.
Yeah. Since we're in the great doubling, has anything actually changed? So I don't know. Let's get to all that. Real quick, though, I told everybody not to worry too much about the bridge that fell as far as from a perspective of supply chain issues.
I just went to the grocery store. There's nothing on the shelves.
Yeah. Remember, was it, when did that happen? The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, was that like 4 or 5 months ago? I'm trying to remember. No, it was like last week. Yeah, it was like this time last week that the barge crashed into the supporting pier and the thing fell down. And everybody said that, not everybody, but a lot of people were doomsday predictions that this thing was going to cause supply chain issues, bottlenecks. You're not going to get farm equipment, trucks, coal, on and on and on. And I was like, wait a second. This is, I'm all for sometimes we get a little, hyperbole going and a little bit of hype, right? But this was, I thought, blown so far out of proportion. It's like, come on, this is one port. And then there was all the, you know, the theories about why they did it. And it's like this was the black swan event. Anyway, the Coast Guard has opened up a channel, an alternate channel to get things through.
A channel is through, but the port itself's not open.
I know, but they're going to move fast on this. I don't think that this was the grocery stores empty.
No, but something just pops in my mind.
Go
so
ahead.
One of the ways they do illegal immigration from Asia, mm-hmm. and this is really sad, they load up people into the cargo containers.
Yeah, it's sad.
And so, you know, you might have some people floating around waiting to dock.
Oh,
right.
That's really, and then, yeah, they don't even know they're there. They're smuggling them. Here's some water. you know, no toilet facilities. You're on the thing for weeks.
And you're on there for an extra
so
2 weeks.
So you're saying there might be people out at sea that are being smuggled in that you don't even know about.
Yep.
And it's being delayed. Yeah, I'm not saying that there's no impacts, Mark, but I'm saying that sometimes we need to put things in perspective that, you know, some single events aren't the end of the world. And I don't think this was one of them.
This is not the end of the world.
No, no. All right, I got something on the abortion issue in Arizona. Big news there. And get your take on this in just a second, Mark. Before I do that, though, remember, if you need to sell a home in the Flagstaff area, call Kelly Broaddus with Broaddus Properties Group, brokered by EXP. She'll put a lot into your home to make sure you get top dollar in a, you know, usually record time. I can't say that it's going to happen every time, but I hear all the time from people that use Kelly Broaddus and like sold in 2 weeks, you know, sold in a week. Mm-hmm. She give you advice, and she gave some folks advice about, hey, why don't you clean up the yard a little bit? Why don't you do some staging and wind up getting a couple hundred, not hundred million, 100,000, not that good. I mean, not 100 million, right, Mark? A couple hundred.
She's good.
Yeah, she's good. But she's more like, hey, I got you a couple hundred more thousand just by doing and taking this advice. Why don't you call Kelly Broaddus right now at 888-446-5602 if you're thinking about buying or selling a home in the Flagstaff area. 888-446-5602. Or go online. You get instant valuation on your home, plus get more information about Kelly Broaddus at northernarizonafinehomes.com. All right, Mark, the Arizona for Abortion Access Group. This is the group that's pushing to get a constitutional amendment in the state of Arizona, which would allow abortion up to the, what they claim, up to the 24th week of pregnancy or until the, until viability, mm-hmm. right? So there's that point there. What I'm being told by others, though, like the Center for Arizona Policy, mm-hmm. is they're saying, and I know you've been following this one closely, they're saying minors, if this passes, if it gets to the ballot and passes, would not need to get parental notification, and it would allow late-term abortions if a doctor or a medical professional, quote-unquote, says it's, you know, health and safety of the mother. They got, as of yesterday, 506,000 plus signatures to put it on the ballot for the constitutional amendment this November. They need 383,000 by July 3rd. So it looks like, as I think we've both been predicting, this is going to make the ballot.
Yeah, the real danger of this bill is it allows exceptions for mental health. So, and not even from a doctor, your healthcare provider person can say, yeah, by having a baby, you might have some mental disturbance. Therefore, you can have abortion right up to the time it's coming out of your womb, late-term abortion, like partial birth. This opens the floodgates to abortion. 100% unrestricted abortion in Arizona is what this is. Don't let the 24-week thing trick you. That is not what it's about. It's about 100% abortion anytime you want.
I can guarantee you, if you're going to have kids, you are going to have mental issues.
Yes.
Mark, we can both attest to that. And all of you listening that have kids, and but it's worthwhile. It's okay.
Yes.
But they're going to come up with, and I've kind of equated it to, remember when we had the medical marijuana law before we had recreational, you could find a doc. There's always somebody in the clinics and places that says, yeah, Mark's got a little bit of a headache. I don't know for sure because I'm not in his head, but
it seems like he says
he's got a headache. So here's your supply. So
here's a great example. So I was, you know, in my late 40s when I had my first kid. And when I found out my wife was pregnant, I had a small panic attack every day for 9 months. You know, but once the baby was born, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. And she's the love of my life. But you know, going into the unknown in your late 40s, you're like, every morning, you know. You're like, what's going
to
be?
Especially, when you're used to, you know.
Single
type life and all that. Yeah.
Yep.
University of Arizona President Robert Robbins is stepping down in 2026. I was like, this reminds me of Boeing. You know, last week the CEO and the chairman of the board and one other high up position, they were all like, they're resigning and leaving, but it's like later, end of the year, next year when their term is up, this and that. You know, Boeing, for example, a company that's taken, no pun intended, a nosedive here and just has so many problems. But U of A has a $140 million plus financial hole because, I don't know, They just went crazy spending money, right? Yep. So this guy who's the captain of the ship, right? He's going to resign in 2026. I don't know, just get going. The problem is now.
Right.
What are you going to do? Try to fix it? What you've jacked up?
Well, it could be, you know, he wants to be fully vested in his state retirement or who knows what.
Yeah, who knows?
There's always something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So U of A, lots of problems. I'm surprised I thought these universities were going to tank a long time ago with all the online stuff going on and people doing stuff virtually. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. But it seems like it's more people going to these universities than ever before.
There are. And especially girls, like the ratio of girls to guys has actually gone way up. It was always more girls than guys at NAU.
Yeah.
And now it's going even higher. It's like more 60-40.
Oh, wow.
It's really high.
Yeah. There must be a whole website to that when people are looking to choose schools.
And for all that,
where's the ratio?
For 60% girls, you cannot find a waitress to hire at your restaurant.
They're called servers now. Servers. Aren't they? Something like that. Anyway, so he's resigning. Someone who is not resigning, and this is from The Hill, here in Arizona, Democrat Representative Raul Grijalva, who has been in Congress since he's 7th congressional district, southern part of the state, Tucson area, I believe.
Yeah.
Southern Arizona. Been in since 2003, so he's been there 20 plus years. He has announced in a statement that he went out to get treatment for like a persistent cough he was having, this and that. And then he was, he thought it was pneumonia, et cetera, et cetera. He tested, discovered he has cancer. And he says, quote, the diagnosis has been difficult to process, but I am confident in the vigorous course of treatment that my medical team has developed. And I've begun my journey to fight this cancer. But he's not resigning from Congress. And this is something I want to ask you, Mark, because I remember I always contend that these positions are always, always, always bigger than the individual.
Mm-hmm.
I was not, and my thoughts, let me put this out, my thoughts and prayers for him. I don't, you know, you want anybody to go through anything like this, and you don't want to try to second guess their decisions while they're going through this. But when Senator McCain, for example, stayed in office
and way too long,
there comes a point, and maybe he's not at that point yet, and maybe everything will work out fine and he'll get treatment. But I have kind of flashbacks to Senator McCain, and he stayed in and he should have resigned for the position because he was going through so much in life.
There are so many people from Ronald Reagan to Joe Biden that should have resigned
at the end for Reagan when he was,
His last couple of years, he did not belong in the presidency. He should have resigned
because of the dementia issues,
which.
We're seeing a repeat here.
And Reagan was like 71, 72.
Oh, he was an old guy at the time, they thought, right? Yeah. Now it's like, wow.
Now I'd love
to have a 72-year-old president running, right?
Right.
So, yeah. But there are times where it's like, I really love doing this job, Congress or whatever, but I'm public representative. Can I really serve? And maybe he can. I don't want to judge because I don't know what the treatment is and this and that.
Right.
But I'm just thinking back to what happened with McCain, and it concerns me because then people don't really have their representative.
Well, I mean, Feinstein was the classic example recently.
No, they were wheeling her in.
Yeah, and telling her how to vote, whispering in her ear.
Yeah. You know,
how to vote yes, vote no.
Yeah, that was really, like you could hear it. You could hear it in the in the video.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just wrong. There's a time to, and I don't know this guy's situation, but there's a time you've got to recognize, just step down.
Yeah. And you've got, it's tough. And you look at it and you're like, well, I want to do, that's got to be a pretty stressful job too. So it can't help that situation. But I don't know. I don't want to second, I'm not trying to, because it's a tough situation, but I've just seen it too many times where, you know, it's a hard situation and it's a rigorous type of job. Like you said, Joe Biden shouldn't be in there. I mean, he shouldn't even be running. He shouldn't even be president now, but he definitely shouldn't be a year from now again.
And the problem with this congressman is if you did step down, you're never getting back in.
No, that's what they
look. That's why you don't want to step down.
It's hard to get back in. All right. I appreciate Rob Wilson coming on yesterday from Timberline Firearms and Training. He told me they got a whole new load of Liberty safes out there. I guess he buys in bulk and they just come in and it's like, you can barely walk in. No, I'm just kidding. It's so many. They had to put them in the shooting range. They have a great indoor shooting range. No, they got them out there. They've got firearms. They got ammunition, accessories, plus the great indoor shooting range, like I mentioned, and all kinds of training opportunities. Take advantage of that. Carry concealed courses, first shots program, intermediate handgun training. They've got everything up to expert level. Call them up, book that. They go fast. They only take so many people per course. 928-526-7900. 928-526-7900. Or like I said, take a quick trip 5 minutes north of the Flagstaff Mall. They say the allergy season's worse than ever. Can you hear my voice?
I can, yeah.
It's crackling. It's like crazy out there right now.
I'm glad you mentioned safes, because I'm a big advocate of having a safe if you're a gun owner. There was a shooting last year of an 18-year-old boy, a man, here in Flagstaff. And the guy that shot him was a 19-year-old who had a pistol, which is illegal. But both sides had gotten guns from their relatives' houses, their grandma's house, parents' house, whatever, that were just laying around.
Just laying around, yeah.
Yeah. And so you should not have a gun laying around. It should be on your person for self-defense or in a safe.
What about that one high up on the wall?
Oh, yeah.
The rifle
up on the wall.
I like that one. I have one. Sorry.
And that's not near as scary as the pistol laying around. Rifles are hard to hide. Like, your teenager isn't going to slip out the door with a rifle in his hand. You know?
Yeah.
Might.
Yeah, that would be a little
tougher.
And
he's not going to sneak into school with it.
Yeah. That's true. What is it, 21 on the pistol?
21, yeah.
Yeah, on the handgun, okay. Did you see the huge fire in Prescott Valley? The Fain Signature Group's big... It's like 685,000 square foot building. I think it was multifamily mostly. It was under construction. You can appreciate this being in construction, Mark. Completely got engulfed in flames. I mean, this thing was torched. When I saw it yesterday, I thought it was, it skimmed across my page. I thought it said Paradise Valley. It was actually Prescott Valley.
Yeah.
Not that it's not worthy if it's in Paradise Valley, but when I saw, I just assumed Paradise Valley. I was like, okay, maybe I'll talk about this tomorrow. But no, it's actually Prescott Valley. A lot of units that were in there. Police are estimating the cost of the damage is about $60 million. Yeah, total. It was frame, you know, it's framed up.
Ready to go. Arson or just accident?
I have no idea. Yeah, I have no idea.
There was a case out here years ago before I arrived when... Valley Crest, they were building homes out there on the west side of Flagstaff, and some environmentalists torched the homes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
And, everybody wants to protect their backyard view, their open pasture by their house, and nobody wants development next to them.
Yeah, yeah. And then we failed to recognize that it was developed on our spot, too.
Right.
You know? Yeah, I know. It's tough. I want to correct something. I failed. It's not really a correction, but I failed to mention his name yesterday. The last living Pearl Harbor survivor. I felt bad after the show because sometimes you get going and you're like, oops. Last living Pearl Harbor survivor aboard the USS Arizona. He died at 102 years old. And I didn't mention his name. His name is Lou Conter. Lou Conter.
Wow.
He died in Grass Valley, California. Heart failure. Lived to be 102 years old. Last USS Arizona survivor.
I'm just doing the quick math in my head. He would have been 19.
Yeah, which was a lot of the guys, right?
Yeah.
18, 19.
Yeah.
I mean, Angela's grandpa, he passed away just a couple years ago. And he was in a book and was very involved with the Underage Veterans of America. He was 15. And they had to lie. His parents lied for him and said he was 16.
Yeah.
And I guess you could get in with a waiver from the parents back then. And back then it was like, they don't have the birth certificate. Yeah. It was just like, okay, the parents say you're this age, what's your birth date? And he got in with the waiver. And I think about that. I'm like, can you imagine being a parent, Mark, and me being a parent? And you're like, okay, let's just pick Owen. Okay, Owen, yeah, you're 15.
Right.
And we'll say you're 16. Go on off to war. And
my dad,
different world.
Actually, my dad lied about his age to go into World War II underage. And at the time he got over there, it was already, Victory in Europe Day.
Okay.
So he served in the forces, like the occupation forces.
Yeah.
But he went in at 17. He didn't even have a birth certificate. He was born at home.
No, he had that.
And they would base it on your baptism certificate for those who had infant baptism or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he went in at 17 and served and, right after the victory, he said Germany was an absolute disaster. I mean, everything was leveled.
It was a mess. Yeah,
you know, you'd see gone. A chimney here and a chimney there standing up. Everything was just flattened.
My grandpa served in the occupation as well. I don't know if it's called the same thing when your dad was there. It's constabulary. And he served in the early 50s over there and actually met my grandma, who was German, and my dad was actually born in Regensburg, Germany, on the base, you know. Yeah. So a different time, though.
Oh, yeah.
Different time. So as that generation really passes away, there's not a lot left. And I was mentioning this yesterday with Rob. We've lost that direct connection with people that went through all of this.
Right. The last of the Holocaust survivors with their arms in their hand.
Yep.
Or on their arm.
Yep. So one more here. This one that you don't hear much about either. Trump did post, this was a day or two ago, the $175 million bond for the civil fraud case. So you remember the judge, he appealed it and they reduced it from the $500 or $600 million that it was.
Yeah, 450 some million.
Okay, yeah. And plus growing every day. They were threatening to seize his assets, so he did find somebody to bond for that and say, yeah, well, he's going to cover this.
I thought he had the cash in his Liberty safe.
Yeah, stacked up.
Just stacked.
Yeah, $100 bills, right? So averts asset seizure, which when I thought about this, it frustrates me so much because now he's basically appealing this and going through the whole process.
Yep.
It's like, what if he didn't avert asset seizure? What if he couldn't come up with the bond, right, Mark? And then the government seized the assets, but then he continues with the appeal and he wins. Does he get the assets back?
Does he get the assets back with interest?
With interest, question. Like the government do? And that's the problem here is they have unlimited pockets and they have unlimited ability to sue and make people's life. If they can do it to the former president, they can do it to anybody.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, oops, 5 years later, I went through all the appeals and I was right.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I've lost everything in the process. That's why so many people settle and make deals.
You not only lose the money, you lose your reputation in the process. Because all people remember is the news headline.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to report on
that. Fraud.
You know, if Trump wins the appeal 3 years from now, nobody's going to remember.
No, they won't.
No.
And all the money you spend in the meantime.
Lawyers
and
all that.
That's why so many people settle and make deals with the district attorneys and this and that. Yep. Because the cost of litigating is so high. He has the resources, but not unlimited resources like they presumed.
Right.
You know, if somebody has a couple $1 billion net worth, doesn't mean they have $500 million sitting in the corner or in their Liberty safe, right? All right. Hey, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. If you get a rock chip in your windshield, call Diamond Auto Glass. They will take care of that chip. Did you get yours fixed yet?
No, it's gotten bigger.
It's gotten bigger. I told you need growing. A whole new windshield. Now, is that your Jeep?
Yep.
Oh, man. That's not even that old. You're going to need a whole new windshield. They'll do that for you as well. They also work with insurance companies, and they'll take really good care of you. On 4th Street in Flagstaff, 928-779-4140. That's 928-779-4140. Or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. We do have Glenn Least coming in the second half of the show, so I look forward to getting an update from him as well. If you want to talk with him one-on-one, call Glenn Least at WT Wealth Management at 928-225-2140. 2474. That's 928-225-2474. Or email them gleest at WT Wealth Management. That's GLEEST, gleest at WT Wealth Management. All right, let's come back with Dr. Bill Noonan, talk about this Save the Cultural Park Committee and his story about moving from the Northwest and this homeless encampment issue there in Sedona. Back in a minute. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up The Jeff Orbit Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
You're listening to The Jeff Orbit Show.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Just Wireless. Welcome back. Mark Houts here with me. Don't forget, second half of the show, we've got Glenn Least will give you a big market update. Plus, we got something on bikes. I don't know if we have time to. I guess Arizona didn't rank very well for bike safety.
Third deadliest in the country.
Yeah, not good. So we'll see if we have time for that. If not, we'll get to it sometime here this week. We do have on the line Dr. Bill Noonan. He's with the Save the Cultural Park Committee. It is a group that is pushing to refer to the ballot a decision that the Sedona City Council made recently. Dr. Noonan, how are you doing today?
Really good. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Absolutely. So I guess let us know, first of all, what did the Sedona City Council do here just in the past couple of weeks? And then we'll get deeper into this.
Well, the City Council on March the 12th in Sedona decided to open a homeless car park in the Cultural Park, which is on the western edge of Sedona, kind of in the heart of the Red Rock Country. And their plan is to put a 40-space car park right next to the stage of an old amphitheater there that was a live entertainment venue 20 years ago. The city calls its homeless site a safe place to park, and it's supposed to be workforce housing for local workers who can't afford a place to live in Sedona. It's also supposed to be a temporary solution, but almost everything the city has said about the program is false. I mean, if you look at the city's website, it clearly says the homeless car park is not just for working people. It says disabled and retired people are allowed into the park, which could mean somebody who decided to quit work at the age of 40 and, you know, lived in a mad lifestyle in a van, or maybe even somebody with a psychiatric disorder who should be in a hospital or a rehab center and not in a parking lot. I think it's also misleading to call it a safe place to park, because there's really nothing safe about encouraging people to sleep in their vehicles, you know, especially in our climate, where people die of the heat and the cold or carbon monoxide poisoning. So it's kind of false advertising to call it safe. I think most people in Sedona believe the car park is really just a solution in search of a problem, a way to spend $1 million of public funds in the least efficient way to help the fewest people possible, and in the process potentially create a homeless crisis.
Well, Bill,
in Sedona, we're not,
this park was purchased by the city of Sedona, I believe, 20 plus million dollars?
23 million dollars. Oof. Yeah.
Okay. So what was the original intent? I would imagine some kind of like place you can take a walk and hang out, have a picnic. I mean, or is it something else? I mean, I don't know the park, so.
Well, the city said that at the time they bought it, they said they didn't know what they were going to do with it, but I think that probably wasn't the case. I believe they intended to develop it as workforce housing, what they call workforce housing, which is really high-density housing.
Okay.
And so they would be taking, and it is, it's a beautiful site on the western edge of the city, you know, far away from the tourist hubbub. It's one of the few undeveloped, you know, spectacular open places left in Sedona. And so the question really is, where does it go from here?
Yeah, where do we go? Well, how many acres?
40 acres.
40 acres, yeah. And you guys, Mark, you've hit on this quite a bit. I mean, I know the Flagstaff median prices, but last I checked, Sedona was...
$1 million.
Was in close to right around $1 million bucks.
$995,000.
We're talking like single family home. Yep. So you acknowledge, and I think we can all acknowledge, that Sedona and many communities, Flagstaff being one of them, well, Paradise Valley, that's a whole nother ball of wax there. But there is a challenge for people to live in the communities who are working the service jobs, working this and that. I mean, I think we're all on the same page there, correct?
Well, yes, there is an issue. But then the question is, how much of a problem is it? I mean, I don't think Sedona has a homeless problem. I mean, people visit Sedona all the time. They, you know, can judge for themselves. They don't see people camping on the sidewalks. I moved here from Portland, Oregon 2 years ago specifically to escape the homeless problem there. And I know what a homeless problem looks like, and Sedona just doesn't have one. And I don't think we will have one unless the city decides to encourage homelessness here by subsidizing it like Portland did and like the homeless car park would do.
Yeah.
You know, to give you an idea about how bad the homeless problem is here, last winter Sedona set up a $30,000 program that they call Code Blue to hand out vouchers to homeless people on cold nights in Sedona. And do you know how many of those vouchers they passed out?
Two?
Zero.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
So that was
zero.
Close.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a homeless problem to me, aside from the waste of public resources. And, you know, your point is well taken that obviously there are some people here who can't afford to live in Sedona. Some of them, you know, some people are living the nomad lifestyle. They work a few hours a week, sleep in their cars in a beautiful place, and they usually stay at camping sites in the national forest. And, you know, it's a free country and people can do that, but I just don't think that's a good reason to subsidize it with public funds.
Yeah, that's increased dramatically. The national forest issue kind of gets me because a lot of listeners, we use the national forest. I've seen encampments within the national forest. Coconino National Forest, for example, is cutting wood last year, and somebody was there for much more than the 14 or 15 days allowed, and piles of trash all over the place. It's just absolutely heartbreaking. So people are using it to either live in, or like you said, the nomad lifestyle and this and that. Mark, you had a question on the cost of this.
Yeah, so I was looking up the projected cost. It was $150,000 startup, and then roughly $400,000 a year that they were going to use grant money from the state housing department to continue keeping this thing going. And they're talking about charging the people who are parking there $2 a night. There's, I don't know what they finally settled on.
Recoup costs.
So I'm curious, I was looking online, did you get enough signatures already? I saw a deadline of March 31st, or maybe that was a different group collecting.
Well, the deadline is, excuse me, the deadline is April the 11th, because the city passed the ordinance on March the 12th. Arizona law gives us the right to veto decisions of cities. If we can collect at least 10% of the signatures of the registered voters in Sedona within a 30-day period, which would be by April the 11th. And so it's a good question. Do we have enough signatures? Because in these ballot referendum processes, you know, typically somewhere around 20% of the signatures that are collected don't count.
Right.
And that's, because, you know, maybe someone isn't registered to vote in Sedona. Maybe they put down the wrong county residence on the petition. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can go wrong. So we're supposed to collect 597 signatures. You know, taking into account that maybe 20% of them won't qualify, we would need at least 720. And then there's a whole back and forth with the city about which of the signatures will count and which won't. So the answer is we can't have enough. We're doing well. We're confident, but we need as many signatures as we can to send a message to City Hall.
Well, you're having a signing event this Friday, April 5th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Do I have this right? Empire Nails?
Yes, it's Empire Nails.
Is that like a nail company that makes nails for building, or are we talking nails for painting?
It's a nail salon.
Okay, so, all right.
For people get manicures and things. And we do have it posted on our website, so, SedonaVotes.com, SedonaVotes, all one word, .com.
Okay.
And it's going to be this Friday, 9 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And if, you know, somebody listening to this program is a registered voter in the city of Sedona and has not yet signed the petition, you know, please come to Empire Nails on Friday and sign it so that your voice can be heard.
Now, have you, when the city council brought this forward, I think it passed 6-1. You had one member that did not support this thing. Was there much hoopla at the time, or did this kind of hit all of a sudden? It was like, whoa, wait a second, we got a 40-space homeless encampment going right in the kind of the prime spot of Sedona with potentially challenges and issues. How did this all develop? I mean, how was this the solution?
Well, people found out about it in January. There was a meeting in January of the city council when I think it first came to most people's attention. And I have to say that most people had the same response I did, which was slack-jawed astonishment. Like, the city is doing what? And it did pass 6-1. The one city council member who voted against it said that she was voting against it because she thought such a contentious issue should be decided by the people, and that she thought that a referendum was a good idea. The city is not legally able to, you know, refer a question like this to the people, so it would be up to us to put it on the ballot. And so she voted against the zoning ordinance, essentially in support of our position that it should be decided by the people, and she signed the referendum petition.
Oh, she did too. Okay. You mentioned that you came from Portland, spent a lot of time there, I guess, and decided to move to Sedona here in the past couple of years. What was it like? Because, you know, it's like everything in this country and in this world. We see things. I was just talking about my trip to Europe recently, and I spent some time in Greece. And apparently Greece and Athens area, there's mountains all around, had completely burned down, according to the media. There was not a tree left. And I got there, and I was like, I couldn't even find a spot that was burnt. You know, so it's like the only reason I point this out is just to show that we hear about this stuff from the media, so-called media, and then it's like, wait a second, I went there and I didn't see that. So we heard about Portland. I know recently I had someone from Goldwater Institute on because I think it was Phoenix that sent Phoenix city officials to Portland to learn how to deal with the homeless issue, which I found kind of interesting. Was it as bad? I guess my point being, Bill, was it as bad as they're saying up there? Tell us your experience in Portland.
Well, I haven't been there in 2 years. It's too painful to go back because the last time I drove, well, So in the summer of 2020 in particular, my office building was right next to that courthouse that was bombarded every night for months. And then when the embers sort of burned out in the downtown area, it was seriously arsonist that fire to the forest around my home outside the city. And so that's when I decided it was time to leave. But the last time I went into the city, there were thousands and thousands of tents all over the streets of downtown. The state had, in 2021 decided that, it was cruel to arrest people for breaking the drug laws. So they essentially abolished the drug laws. And there were people lying on the sidewalk with needles in their arms, and the death rate from overdoses skyrocketed. And so to send people to Portland to figure out how to solve the problem is insane.
Laughable.
But what I did see was there were people living on the sidewalk as far as the eye could see. I had to stop the car because there were people brawling in the middle of the street. It was like wasteland, some nightmare. The terrible thing is about it, I loved Portland. I mean, it used to be considered like the most livable city in the country, and it was spectacular. And then it was just destroyed by public policy. And I lost one city I loved to bad ideas, and I don't want to lose another.
Yeah, you don't want to lose another. And you come to Sedona and don't expect these things to happen. And that's how it starts. It starts small, and then next thing you know, it can go crazy.
So my question, is essentially a campground. They're talking about putting in showers run by diesel generators. You're creating a little campground here. Why not just let people go to a campground and camp?
Well, the city has been careful to try to distinguish it from a campground because they're letting people stay there overnight, and it's supposed to be open, I think, from 4 in the afternoon to 8 in the morning.
That's camping. That's a campground, Bill. That's a campground. The same rules, except somebody in the private sector is running the campground usually. But go ahead.
That's their distinction. And they say because people aren't staying there that they won't the city doesn't have to worry about being sued for wanting it to eventually close the car park. But in San Luis Obispo, just a couple of weeks ago, they had a safe car park. They finally decided they had to close it down because of public health hazards. And when they tried to close it down, the people who were staying in the car park sued and got a temporary restraining order from a judge to keep the car park open. So, the city of Sedona says, well, this is temporary, but the experience of other places doesn't suggest that's true.
Okay. All right. I think what you're doing is a really good thing, Bill. I think this was too big of a decision for, now we have our elected representatives in Sedona as well, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's too big of a decision and too big of a policy change and for just the council, for just those 7 to make. I think this should go to the voters, and I think you're on track there.
Some real quick math. If there's 40 spots and they're costing $434,000 a year, that's over 10 grand per car.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think it's 1,000. So I did the math, and it's basically $1 million program over 2 years. And the interesting thing is like $500,000 of that is going to the Verde Valley Homeless Coalition. So it's not going to help, people directly. But if the city had taken the $1 million in a 2-year program for, the 40 beneficiaries of it in the cultural park, they could have given $1,000, voucher for housing to 40 people for 2 years.
Right. That's what I was getting at.
To help them, because a lot of people, we don't all get to live in every place we want to live. A lot of people in Sedona that work in Sedona commute from other places in the Verde Valley.
Sure.
And okay, here's a voucher for some gas costs, maybe. I mean, that's just life.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. You could give them $1,000 voucher a month for the cost here, and they could apply that to rent. It's the government getting involved.
Here's the website, folks. You live in Sedona, you got to be in the city limits of Sedona, registered voter. I lost it. SedonaVotes.com. SedonaVotes.com. And don't forget, there's a signing. You can sign the referendum, the petition this Friday, April 5th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Empire Nails, 140 Coffee Pot Drive. I got this, info at the website. So if you can't remember all that, cause I already forgot too. SedonaVotes.com, SedonaVotes.com. Bill, keep us up to date as to what happens, and especially if you get these signatures coming up, and I wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Pleasure to be here.
All right. Love to hear from you. And I should get this up. I'll put a post up on the website too. talkwithjeff.com.
What's wrong with putting it to a public vote?
No, it should. Yeah. Wherever you're at, and this was too big for them to decide.
Right.
And you gotta be real careful with this stuff, because next thing you know, it turns into,
well, interestingly,
what happened in Portland.
Just down the road, the Forest Service closed a bunch of camping areas, here 2 years ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so now the people that were camping there and working or not working have to go somewhere.
Yeah. Well, more and more of the forest does get closed. But then, of course, we got bigger and risk issue. We've had, Sheriff Driscoll on. He talks about how it falls on his office to do the enforcement out there, because the National Forest Service, they don't have the people to hit these vast areas. All right. Love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hey, if you want a great steak, head on out to the Rodeo Steakhouse in Williams. I love going out there and have a good time, get a great steak. Get some great ribs. I think they have the trout too. I have to recheck the menu. I haven't had the trout yet, but I've had ribs.
Love
and then
trout.
The pepper steak is really good as well. The Rodeo Steakhouse in Williams. It's right there at 950 North Grand Canyon Boulevard. So right there by that Ramada Inn. Rodeo Steakhouse in Williams. Go check it out. If you need to get refinanced, or if you're buying a new home, if you're maybe starter home, first time home buyer, man, it's tough. It's tough. And a lot of people are looking for different programs, different, incentives as far as the lower down payment, things like that. Mm-hmm. Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loan, she has her pulse on all that stuff. So refinancing, new home purchases, maybe you're working up the line, getting a bigger home, maybe you're going the other way, downsizing a little bit, investment properties, off-grid properties. She can do it all. Call Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans. Mention the Jeff Orbit Show. Get $250 off the lender's fee at closing. 928-310-6458. 928-310-6458. Or go to NovaHomeLoans.com/Kim Dawson. Kim Dawson, MLS 697411. Nova Home Loans, MLS 3087. BK number 090242. Equal housing opportunity. Subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions may apply. More to come. Listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Orbit Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there, and on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Orbit Show.
All right, we'll come back, and we're expecting Glenn Least to get a market update.
Yes.
What's going on there? And I want to try to get to this bikes. Arizona not being the safest place for bikes.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
Third deadliest in the nation.
Yeah, so even if they're wrong by a bit, it's not like it's going to be good. Safest. Yeah, so we'll hit on that. Don't forget to get comments in. You want to share anything with us, we'd love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hang tight. Back in just a few. The information provided on the Jeff Orbit Show does not constitute legal, medical, financial, or tax advice. All information is the opinions of the host and guests. You should always seek the advice of a professional regarding any of these complex issues to make sure all circumstances of your situation are properly considered. This portion of the show is brought to you by American Trailer Company. Get more information at AmericanTrailerAZ.com.
This is the Jeff Orbit Show.
All right, welcome back. Mark Howitz here with me. Glenn Least from WT Wealth Management joins us with several scrolls of information, right, Mark, on inflation and I don't know. What is it? My lying eyes, you know, or the government numbers? What do we trust here, Glenn?
So the message we're given is, you know, we've got inflation under control, meaning it's not rising as fast as it was. However, when you add up the cumulative inflation from 2020 till now, it's like 25% or greater of just everything. So,
yeah,
we're not going up at 10%, but we're still 25% higher, and 2% or 3% on top of that is still, you know, a lot. So, yeah, that's kind of the messaging we've been hearing is inflation's under control, which is why the Fed has been backing off on raising rates.
But it's, again, trust what they're saying or trust my lying eyes when I go to the store, because you say 25%.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what? I went to a restaurant today and I hadn't been there in 10 or 12 months. And I saw the price and it was another, let me do the math real quick. It was 20% higher than 10 to 12 months ago. And I had to do a double take.
Wow.
It's like, wow, this isn't going to be an expensive lunch. And it wasn't like luxury, you know, escargot here or something.
Yeah.
You ever had escargot? I haven't even had
it. No. No, man. I don't eat that.
That's the only thing I could think of, man.
Oh, yeah. But it's so much more expensive.
I think
the
boots on the ground experience is different than the government number bureaucrat cubicle crunchers.
Well, yeah, you look at what the numbers are actually looking at. They're just measuring the increase year over year of inflation. And yeah, it's not growing as fast, but still it's so much higher than it was in 2020, which is why we go to the grocery store and the, you know, what used to, you know, $50 used to buy a bag. Now it's $60, you know, fills up a bag and or 70. And it's just, talk about going out to eat. It's just painful. I showed the wife one time the bill. She's like, oh my gosh, that's how much it costs.
Oh, man.
You know, yeah. Well, we got delivery and, you know, all this, and it's like pricey. So yeah, I think a lot of Americans, unfortunately, if you look at the credit card debt, it's actually risen from about $800 billion to over $1 trillion since 2020 till now, which is right around the cumulative inflation number. So I think a lot of families, unfortunately, are absorbing those extra costs because we're not making 20 to 25% more in wages. I think a lot of families are, unfortunately, just absorbing in credit card debt. And that's really unfortunate. It becomes very problematic if people start losing their jobs.
Yeah, and they're absorbing that debt for consumable things,
yeah,
for things that normally, you know, food, gas.
Yeah,
I saw a thing. I was listening to somebody else's podcast, and they were talking about this burgeoning industry of financing your rental payments.
Oh,
I'd never heard of that. Where,
wow.
Like, sometimes, okay, you get into a short term situation. It's like they, you know, those payday loans have popped up over the decades, and this and that, and you run into a situation where this month I get a really bad position. But this is actually a company that I found that was financing, like, we pay it weekly. And the interest rates were, top of my head, 20 to 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And they're financing the rent and making those rent payments for people. And I'm like, how does that work?
So if you look at the payday lending places, the APR in those are like 200%+.
With all the fees and all that?
Well, yeah, because it's such a short period of time. If they just charge 30% and it only was for like 2 weeks, they're like, well, that's not going to cover our risk that we're, you know, incurring. So yeah, sometimes it's 200-300% APR, but you know, you don't keep that payday loan for more than a couple of weeks, because then
you hope, yeah,
well, you hope, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I mean, this is like the movies you watch with the old mobster stuff, right? I'm not saying that specifically if you're in the payday
industry. There's that Chevy Chase movie.
I'm just saying, you know, you go down and you get what's the VIG or whatever they call it. You know, it's like what's the street interest rate, and it's like a weekly compounding 10% or something like that. I don't know.
Wow,
I don't know. So it's crazy. All right, let's get more into what's going on in the economy, more of what Glenn thinks he's seeing out there. Before I do that, though, I want to remind you, if you want to block all that out, you know, and just, you get the blackout blinds from the Blind Brothers, right? And it's good for your energy bill as well, because you spend a lot of money. You lose, what'd you put the R value on Windows?
Windows
2 or something, 4?
2-pane window is at best about an R3, at best.
Okay, with summer arriving any day now, going from winter to summer in northern Arizona, you should get investing in new blinds, I think, is a really good decision. Call the Blind Brothers, longtime sponsor here on the program, and we got all new blinds in our home in Flagstaff from the Blind Brothers. They did a great job, including the installation. Mention the Jeff Horvitz Show, and installation's half off, and that's in addition to any other advertised specials. Do your neighbors a favor. Call the Blind Brothers, 928-634-2423. 928-634-2423, or go to theblindbrothers.com. All right, Glenn Least is here with us, Mark Howard as well.
I got a quick question, because I'm kind of a dummy when it comes to all the investing in the Dow Jones and all that. So first of all, the Dow versus the NASDAQ.
Yep.
Are they both up?
Yes, for the year, but they also look at different portions of the market. So okay. S&P 500 is the top 500 companies purely based on size in America. So let's make up imaginary numbers. Say you add them all together and it's $1 trillion and Apple is, say, $100 billion. Well, that would be 10% of the trillion. So they would represent 10% in that S&P 500.
Okay.
NASDAQ is not 500 stocks. It's around 40 and it's really technology weighted. So the question is, well, next one is, what does the Dow Jones have? The Dow Jones is around 30 companies and it's a lot of industrial, energy, manufacturing.
Only materials. 30?
30, yeah.
Wow.
So depending on is oil up or is technology up, they can be very different you know, stories. Because you look at like a year like 2023, the S&P was up like 18%. We get the NASDAQ was up 33%. So,
okay.
Yeah, it can be very different.
And the Dow changes, right? I mean, you could have, like, at one point there was like Sears in there probably or something like that. Like, yeah. Like there's different companies that swap in and out of that depending
yeah.
on
yeah.
certain factors, I think.
Yeah, I've only seen the numbers seem to be going up and up. I think Dow's basically at an all-time high. I mean, maybe not today, but in general.
Pretty much everywhere is, yeah, all-time highs, yeah.
But is that accurate? Because I've got a small stock portfolio, and maybe 3 of the 15 are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the whole stock market. Didn't we talk about that like a month ago?
Yeah, the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. That's not so, like 3?
Yeah, it was really 7 names, and the S&P 500 accounted for about 93% of the returns. And it was your Apple, Amazon, NVIDIA, Tesla,
these are all Microsoft, huge companies.
Google, maybe.
Google.
Or Alphabet, whatever they call it.
And I think maybe Facebook is on there.
But one thing you noted last time, though, is NVIDIA, which is a lot behind the architecture of the AI stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They make the boards and chips and this and that, right? A lot of those other companies you mentioned that are making up the big gains in the stock market are just, they're buying from NVIDIA. It's kind of like this, you know, self-perpetuating thing because they're relying on that to do their AI and stuff and to get the technology.
Yeah, Microsoft and Google are probably some of the biggest AI investors at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got some big pockets and they're putting a lot of money towards that technology. So, yeah, it makes sense why they're synergistic or they have very similar results and you know, one plays off of the other. And so as the demand goes up over here, the demand goes up on the other side too. So you're 100% correct.
Okay. Inflation, is the stock market at, did you finish there? Because
no, yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Is it high because of inflation?
Yeah, so the Dow's at like, what, 39,000? But is that, what is that in $1980, so to speak? Like, what is...
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far, Mark. What is that in 2019?
Okay, 2019.
Because like, I'm under the idea that we're in a great doubling here. Everything's just doubling. So while your currency is halving, is that a...
So in other words, it's 39,000 for the Dow. Is that really like 18,000
2019, yeah.
Yeah, worth the buying power. You know, that's a great question. Off the top of my head, I don't know the relation there, but... Certainly, they call it the rule of 72. So you take 72, divide it by whatever the percentage is, and that tells you how long it takes to double. So if it's 10%, so 72 divided by 10, it'd be 7 years for whatever you're looking at to double in price or value or whatever.
Yeah,
too much math, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if you look at even 2019 till now, just, you know, feeling it in your checkbook and your wallet, it's like, oh my gosh, things are so much more expensive.
Oh yeah.
I mean, insurance is just out of control expensive, like homeowners, any kind of liability. And that's for a myriad of reasons, but I look at California as a kind of part of the problem as far as why we see that. Oh, look at that.
Okay, yeah. I just pulled up on the screen Biden Mart. And keep in mind, this is a Trump PAC or something paid for by Make America Great Again, Inc., right? But it lists, you know, where we were when Trump was in office and where we are with Biden. And you can click on, and I like to do like eggs. Where'd eggs go? He's done that 12-pack of eggs. You click that on your shopping list, and it's Biden-Mart.com. They're saying that it was 212 under Trump, it's 288 under Biden, 35.85%. But then you go through here and you click on like lemons. Right? What does it cost for some lemons?
Wow.
They're saying 52% increase from 364 to 553. I think this is pretty accurate because you go to the store and you're like, well, the bag here, same size, but it's...
Is there hot dogs on
a
here?
A bunch more. Let's check hot dogs.
They right, have, I do.
Well, they had to put ice cream because, you know, what is Biden spending for? Where'd ice cream go? Let's get in touch with the campaign here and tell them to do this in alphabetical order.
No, you feel it though, because I rarely shop. My wife does most of the shopping. And that's when great. I go to the grocery store, I'm like, wow, I just spent $400 on a basket.
Yeah. Yeah. 56% increase in ice cream. So, probably for a smaller container too.
And recently in our household, we've gone gluten free for everything. And so just double it again.
Oh, yeah. No, this is not your sharp shopping list, Glenn. No. This is like, you know, where I go shopping and stuff because it's just like the normal stuff, like the generic brand, you know, the whatever malto meal.
So organic is technically a grocer's term for meaning twice as expensive.
Is that what it is? Yeah. That's why they have
gluten free just three times as expensive, right?
Yeah, so, that's why they have the little carts at those stores. Onions up 55%.
Wow.
And this is a good encouragement for the backyard garden.
It is.
Right?
What about the pineapples? That's like my jam right there.
Pineapples each up 40%. So, you know, it's crazy. So people are feeling it, but how long do you think people can continue to put this on the card? I mean, you mentioned credit card debt's gone 800 billion to 1.something trillion. Yeah. How long can you do that? And you got 25-30% interest in this stuff, 20 minimum, I would imagine.
So
when's the day when it's like, okay, I can't do anything else. I'm staying home forever.
So the Federal Reserve is talking about even lowering rates, you know, towards the end of this year, 3 rate cuts. And let's think about the dynamics of that. So it actually will lower the interest rates on credit card, of corporate debt, you know, pretty much any kind of borrowing of money, it'll come down in price. And so, which sounds good, except for when you look at when they lower the interest rate, you know, one of the main, you know, ramifications of that is the inflation kicks back up. And part of it's actually the banking sector, because it's cheaper to lend money and they lend more of it, and fractional lending, they create more money. So, yeah, it's They kind of have to lower rates because there's a lot of corporate debt that was financed during 2020 at these abnormally low levels.
Oh, it's crazy.
And now they're coming due, you know, 5 and 7 years later, and they can't refinance them at 10 and 12% corporate debt when they were used to 3. I mean, you're going to see some pain there. So I think they will cut rates. And so for all of us that are wondering what
you
to do.
You think they will? This year? Okay, yeah, 100%, because I'm on the opposite end here. I actually predicted recently, I said, I think there's a near zero chance they're going to cut rates because the inflation factor.
No, you're in an election year. I think
what Mark said.
So you're a rate cut guy.
Definitely not a raise. Possibly a rate cut.
Okay, well let me put a mark next to this. I said that if they do cut it, it'll be an eighth or a quarter point, just to say they did it.
It's a stimulus.
To say they did it. But as far as anything significant, I don't think it's coming.
So I was actually listening to a podcast the other night, and they're talking about the Federal Reserve and election interference. And so it's an interesting topic because as the Fed, you can either juice the economy or tank the economy depending on your monetary policy. So my thought is, should the Federal Reserve lower rates? Probably not. Will they be pressured to do it? Probably. Because if you lower rates, it juices up the economy. Everything looks better. You get into the voting polls, and if you're the incumbent, you know, looks better for you. So I do think we'll see that. The Federal Reserve has a policy where they said 90 days within that election date, they won't make any changes, but we'll see.
Okay, where's that? So we're talking.
But
if they don't do it by August, you're saying typically they wouldn't do it as far as a 90-day type situation.
Yeah, because they want to try and not interfere with the election. That's their, you know, their stance, but we'll see. I mean, the Federal Reserve chairman and people are appointed by the president. So I have a hard time believing that there isn't going to be some sort of pressure there to say, if you don't do this, you're not going to be here, you know, this next, you know, go around.
Yeah, so, maybe not out in the public, but hey.
Behind closed doors, absolutely. Yeah,
you need to help us out here. You may not have a job. Although Powell was put in by Trump, I believe.
Yeah. So actually, if they lower rates, let's think about what that will do to the overall economy. So, yes, it'll kick up inflation, but it also cause asset prices to just appreciate tremendously. Assets being real estate. You think about right now, you know, your 30-year mortgage is 7.5%, 8%, and during the pandemic, it was 3%. So what if you're wanting to upgrade your house and you have a 3% mortgage, but in order to sell the current house and get into the new one, you have to assume an 8% mortgage?
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll see a lot of people just say, hey, I'll just wait until interest rates come down. So as the interest rates come down, I think you'll see, one, people can buy more of a house, and two, people can sell more, you know, get better top dollars. So I think as those rates come down, they don't even have to be at 3%. I think if they get to like 4.5, 5, I think you'll see just a tremendous amount of volume happen in the real estate market.
What if the wizards behind the curtain lose control? I'm just throwing all kinds of stuff at you today, Glenn.
Yeah.
And here's what I mean. We've got, and Zero Hedge did a big thing on this. We're adding We're adding $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days or so. But now it's also calculated that we're adding $100 billion in interest payments every approximately 4 months. So the national debt is now at close to $35 trillion. Everybody is now recognizing this is a long-term structural problem. Biden just came out with an $8 trillion budget, by the way, which is just laughable, on $5 trillion in tax receipts, so a $3 trillion deficit, right? But what if they lose control of those interest rates because all of a sudden the U.S., the number one expense quickly becomes interest payments on the national debt, surpassing, it already surpassed national defense. It's already over $1 trillion. It just hasn't really hit yet. And then it's also expected, and I think within 12 months, we may see it be the number one expense on the government books, passing Social Security and Medicare. What if they lose control of those treasuries? Treasuries are about 4.25% right now, but it's much higher to refinance them. So it's it's costing a lot more in interest. Is it this kind of a snowball effect that we're seeing? Do you, okay, let me rephrase this. Do you stay up at night thinking that they could lose control of this whole thing and you ain't going to be able to buy ice cream anymore?
So when people ask, where do you see the U.S. dollar going? And the answer is eventually to zero because it's a fiat currency and they can continue to print
as much. I want to know when. We don't give financial advice here. But
so,
go ahead,
so the dollar is going to devalue. We know that. If you look at a dollar in 1800 versus what it's worth today, it's like less than 0.5% of its original value. Yeah. Because we went off the gold standard. When you went off the gold standard, they can just... quantitative easing, right? It just means run the printing
press. Print money.
Yep, yep. It causes inflation and causes your money to be worth less because you still have the same amount of eggs or butter or groceries that people still need to buy. So there's just more money in the same amount of goods. So that's what causes the inflation to go up. So do they lose control? I think if they don't make any changes, it's going to happen eventually. I mean, that or we start selling off our national parks or start drilling, you know, as much as we can out of Alaska and these oil places and just sell as much as we can to try and get that paid off. But it's going to be problematic because it seems like no politician ever wants to cut programs. And so they're somehow supposed to work this magic out of we're going to lower the deficit, but we're not going to cut anything. You're like, okay, well, what's the other option? Raise taxes. Oh, that's not going to be popular. So because if you raise taxes too much, too fast, or even just in general, it can decentivize people. So if you're a business owner and if you want to take, say, this just to make an example. So say you're doing $1 million of revenue, but when you get to $2 million of revenue, your tax rate jumps by 25% or 50%. You're going to say incrementally, how much stress and energy does it take to get to that next level? Just to give a lot of it back. You may say, you know what? My life is better just staying at the million without all that extra stress. And so when you have a progressive tax system where the more you make, the higher percentage you pay, you're actually disincentivizing economic productivity. And so that's always been my qualm with the tax code is, why are you penalizing people for doing well?
Yeah, for succeeding.
Yeah.
Don't stop them from getting to that next threshold.
So we were just talking, I just filed my taxes today.
Oh.
I was asking my accountant these questions, like, I heard municipal bonds are tax-free, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's like, yeah, in your tax brackets, no real benefit, but at the billionaire level, where they're going to pay 37% on their income, sure, the municipal bond's only paying like 4% or whatever it is.
It's equivalent to probably 7 or 8.
Right, yeah. Once you're not paying the tax on it. And so, to go to what you're saying, Glenn, is as you increase taxes, especially on the top end like Biden wants to do, those people are just going to put their funds into tax-deferred places because they don't want to pay that 40%, 50% back in the Reagan days when he first came into office.
So he maybe here's a perspective. You see someone in your community and they're driving just an absolutely just amazing sports car. And you're like, man, that is such a sweet ride. Oh, man, they shouldn't be allowed to be that rich, you know. But then you think about it, you're like, wait a minute. It took people to work to create that, you know, get the steel to, you know, put it together, to assemble it and to sell it. And so, yes, it is creating jobs. And if you want a free, you know, society, there's always going to be a wealth inequality gap. There's no way of getting around it unless you say equal outcomes. You know, and equal outcomes is not equal opportunity. They're very two very different statements. So I think you're always going to see some sort of, you know, disparity. But the question is, do we model the tax code to punish those that are doing the best? Because if it becomes too, you know, prohibitive, they'll just say, we're just not going to do as much business. And guess what? The people that were working those jobs lose out. So my philosophy is, you know, you want to incentivize the right kind of behavior and you want to decentivize the wrong kind of economic behavior.
Well, that goes back to the thing. The best thing rich people can do with their money is spend it for the nation as a whole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Put it back into the economy.
70% of our economy is consumer spending. It's you. It's me. It's Mark going out and going to Best Buy, gas station, food, you know, movies, just whatever. It's us spending.
Well, I've heard I've seen some stats, the upper tiers really they're spending money. I mean, that's why you see some of these crazy real estate prices in some areas for certain luxury properties. That's why you see certain luxury vehicles, clothing, things like that. Those markets remain on fire, and they're really just trying to figure out, should I say this is a good problem to have, I guess, right? What do I do with the money?
Right.
You know, do I just put it in a pile like Scrooge McDuck, you know, or do I go out and buy all kinds of stuff? All right. I want to get into more, including AI. I hope we can get to bikes. If not, we're going to have to push that. And if you got comments, love to hear from you. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. That's talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. Hey, if your HVAC system goes out, call Gettles High Desert Mechanical. Or better yet, just put it on the fridge or in your phone. You're laughing. I mean, nobody puts it on the fridge anymore, right? I would. Put it on there because you don't know when your heater goes out or the AC side of that HVAC with, I think it's supposed to be, isn't it 70s in the Verde Valley coming up here in the next couple days?
60s in Flagstaff.
So, hey, you need and get this thing serviced. Get your HVAC system serviced and checked out. Make sure the AC is running real good. Plus, Gettles High Desert Mechanical also does plumbing. Here's their number. If you're in the Prescott area, if you're in the Verde Valley, Sedona, Flagstaff, call Gettles High Desert Mechanical, 928-567-2200. 928-567-2200. Or go to Gettles, G-O-E-T-T-L-S, Gettles, HDM.com. Thanks to our longtime sponsor here, Diamond Auto Glass, where the difference is clear.com. Get your windshield fixed, Mark.
I'm getting to it.
Before
the
it
crack
spreads,
has grown straight down
now
the
now. Mark's got a big problem. Diamond Auto, you got that problem too?
Yeah, I'm not even going to tell you how long the windshield's been cracked for.
Okay, well, get a new windshield at Diamond Auto Glass. Tell him I sent you. I saw it. Look, you remember Ace Ventura? He's like hanging out the window because the whole windshield's cracked. You don't want to be that guy. That's Glenn driving around. Anyway, Diamond Auto Glass, go give them a call right now. Right there on 4th Street in Flagstaff, you can just zip on and get the rock chip repaired. Or in these two cases, get the whole windshield replaced. 928-779-4140. 928-779-4140. Or go to thedifferenceisclear.com. Back in a minute. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe. Look up the Jeff Orbit Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there. And on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
You're listening to the Jeff Orbit Show.
I've got more questions for Glenn here. We're going to have to push the bike thing because I'm curious if you and Glenn Lisa's here with us from WT Wealth Management. I have a pretty good pulse on real estate and commercial, especially commercial real estate rentals, things like that. And I hear these tales from other cities, from big cities, let's say New York, San Francisco, things like that. The tale of two cities, at least, about the impending commercial real estate market apocalypse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at and it goes to show you all real estate, especially real estate, is very local. I don't see it in Flagstaff, for example. I don't see it in Northern Arizona. In actuality, I mean, I'm looking at commercial occupancy. We've been 100% for a very, very long time. I had one vacancy just come up recently for a small office space, and it got gobbled up quick. I had multiple people asking for this, right? But then I hear about what's going on in other cities, and there's a shadow loss that's out there, I guess you could call it, where banks are basically not acknowledging that these places are, for all practical purposes, broke and probably have to be foreclosed on. There's whole floors and in some cases whole buildings that are empty because no one ever returned after COVID or companies went broke, you name it.
Yep.
And they know it, but because, and there's still, I think one case is a Twitter, wherever that's based, is that San Francisco? Wherever Twitter's at, and I don't be quoted on that. Wherever Twitter is, Elon Musk is trying to renegotiate all of this rental space because he doesn't need as much because of all the challenges that have happened there. So what they're doing is he's basically not paying. He's in renegotiating process. But there's situations where they're acting like the places are full or they're getting full rent when they're actually not. So what are you hearing about the commercial banking sector? What's going on in that part of the economy? Because I think there might be somewhat of a shadow problem that's maybe creeping out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think it's location, 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 right? And policies matter because policies will affect the attractiveness of that policy or that property if you're a business owner. For example, you want to run a downtown clothing shop in San Francisco where it's legal to steal. Like, good luck making a profit, right? Or it's legal to just camp outside, you know, the establishment. So there's no, it's really kind of anarchy. So as a business owner, you're going, yeah, that's not going to work. I mean, you look at how many stories you've heard of places closing down in those areas, Whole Foods, you know, these big stores, and they just say, they come up with some excuse that sounds good PR, but it's because the policies are horrible and commercial real estate has really been suffering those areas. And I think, again, part of it is the community and the laws and the policy and the culture, because Flagstaff, Northern Arizona, we're not having that issue. I think in San Francisco, it's like 35% vacancy rate is what we're being told. So what is it, their actual real number? Veritas, I think is what it's called, is like the largest real estate developer in San Francisco, just handed back the keys to the bank, said, here you go. And they have like 12 massive apartment complexes, and they just took $1 billion loss and just took it and said, here you go, it's your problem.
Even
now.
On the residential side, huh? Even
it's like affordable housing, and so they're trying to spin it like, oh, we'll get a buyer for this. But anytime you have those rent controlled or affordable housing, it becomes very hard to find an investor because they're handcuffed as far as what they can do, which is why if you look at any kind of rent controlled places like in New York City that have been like that for any length of time, they're run down.
Oh,
they're just terrible shape. And so, again, policies matter. Yeah, I think those places, they call it a doom spiral, a doom loop, where it's like all the businesses leave, and then the people that were working those businesses were like, well, we don't need to live, you know, so close, and then they're losing out on tax revenue because all these businesses have left. So in their infinite wisdom, they double down and raise taxes even more. And so the businesses are like, well, now we even have more reason not to be here. So I think a place like San Francisco, it's going to take a while for it to recover. Probably, at least a decade or more, but maybe you can snatch up some good property there for cheaper. But
maybe.
If they change, I think a lot of these big cities that are doing that are starting to wise up saying, this just isn't working. I mean, LA, is another good example. They're like, or Portland, Oregon, they're like, these policies aren't working. It's lawlessness.
By the way, last hour we had a guest on who moved from Portland, to Sedona, and then Sedona council voted to make a cultural park, the big park, $20 million park into a homeless encampment, right? In the evenings only or whatever they're saying.
An employed homeless
encampment. Yeah, and he's trying to get signatures to at least refer this to the voters. Do we want a homeless encampment in the city of Sedona rather than just the city making this decision on their own? And what's that website? That's SedonaVotes.com, SedonaVotes.com, and the deadline is coming up. So he moved, anyway, the reason why I'm bringing it up, he moved from Portland to get away from that stuff. So, and then he wound up in Sedona, and they're doing something similar.
When you talk about a number of like 35% vacancy in San Francisco, it doesn't account for all the companies that are still under lease, but that have vacated the building.
Yes, and they have no intention. And to give you scale, before all that happened, before the pandemic, is around 3%.
Okay.
And so, yes, there's a ton of businesses that are not planning coming back, but maybe they're locked into a 5 or 7 or 10 year lease because commercial doesn't do like month to month.
It's usually three to five.
Yeah, usually a little longer. So I think we're going to see even more vacancies in those areas. And it's funny because I was actually driving up the Pacific coast, maybe like it was like summertime last year.
Yeah.
We happened to drive through Portland, Oregon, and I was there with my kids, and I said, hey, in this town, it's legal to just take whatever you want, from the stores. And my kids are like 7 and 9. They're like, well, that doesn't make any sense, Dad. How do the businesses survive? And I was like, exactly. I don't know. Good question. But, I think the sectors that are doing well for real estate, we got residential, industrial warehouse space is doing quite well. Mm. But commercial, I think it depends on where you're looking at. If you're looking at, you know, California or New York, you know, those are going to be very different from like a Florida or Texas. I mean, this just is what it is. So,
yeah, I've seen some of those places that you're mentioning, Mark, where they're not even paying. They're not paying the landlord, but the landlord still counts it as occupied for banking purposes. So again, back to that shadow occupancy, that's maybe not even there.
And you brought up the thing, Glenn, about under rent control, the landlord has no motivation to fix things up. Mm-hmm. So interestingly, in New York, there's always been a rat problem in New York. Everybody knows that, right? So now there's a move by a legislator in New York to get rid of the sticky traps that your rats would walk across and get stuck on. Because, and he said, this is quoting from him, he said it's animal cruelty that the animal might be stuck there for days before he dies. Mm. So they want to outlaw these traps. I'm like, are you kidding me? New York is already so rat infested, and now you want to outlaw one of the ways to get rid of the rats.
Just send some people in with guns into the subway. The tunnels, like hunt them.
I got
them down because they're like this big. Well, it's like a javelina.
And be careful because you might run into a rat king, and then you're in for it.
It's like a javelina. Yeah, oh, you're talking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
So I got off at a train stop one time in New York, and it was not my stop, but I needed to get off and use the bathroom. You have to go to the train stop there. And, man, it was late at night, and there was just rats everywhere. So, like, some of the train stations are clean.
Yes.
But if you get off in the wrong neighborhood in Queens or Brooklyn or somewhere, that's just a bad neighborhood. It's just rats everywhere crawling up and down the walls. I was like, oh, my gosh.
And yeah, it's rough.
You're waiting for the train to get back on. In the bad neighborhoods, the trains don't stop that often. You're just like, oh, gosh.
So interesting enough, we have a publicly traded company in Flagstaff, Synestec, and that's exactly the technology they're trying to develop was a it's a marsupial contraceptive is really what
rats, like rat birth control.
Yeah. And so they like to eat this liquid and it makes it so they can't reproduce. But it's also not toxic if other people come into contact with it or another animal eats them. So that's the problem. If you do poison and there's all these rats everywhere, also now you've just got poison everywhere. And, you know, then people walking through it, now they're, you know, inhaling the poison and that's not good. So it's not, I don't know how to fix the problem, but it's kind of crazy when you hear about these stories.
Well, and part of that, going back to the rent control thing, the landlord's not motivated to fix the holes in the wall and the entrances where and the trash problems and all this. My sister lived in rent control in Uptown San Francisco. I mean, right there in a really nice spot. But they always kept the lease going because they didn't ever want to move out because rent would quadruple.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And why do they even do it in those areas like that? We talked about that last year, I think, Mark, that city of Flagstaff was doing a subsidized rental development in like downtown Flagstaff. You're like, wait a second, this is some of the most prime property out there. Why would you do it right there?
It's literally the most desirable empty piece of property in Flagstaff because once you build on there, it's high enough above downtown you could get views. It's right there, and they're turning it into, quote, affordable housing in the most desirable,
expensive
part of town.
And that doesn't even make sense from if you were to look at it from a tax, and I hate property taxes. I think it's one of the worst things you can do. I also hate income taxes. I guess I hate most taxes, right? But it's one of the worst things you can do because that's your highest value area, and you're kind of crunching down that value because you're crunching down the rental amount. So the value of the property's got to be less because the income coming in is less. So you get less revenue from the taxes from that standpoint.
So in San Francisco, right, they're trying to do affordable, you know, housing. San Francisco is never going to be affordable.
No. If you need affordable housing, do not live in San Francisco.
Yeah. And so I don't know there's ever a solution to that problem because, you know, if you do the rent control, now no one has the incentive to actually take it on as an investment because if you're the landlord, it's got to be the juice has got to be worth the squeeze because otherwise you'll just say not interested, right? Yep. And so, you know, the property rights are also important. You know, some states are figuring this out sooner rather than later that, you know, Florida, for example, passed the squatter thing,
right?
Like, if there's squatters on the property, you know, you can take them out and evict them. Like, it seems like common sense, but not always the case in all states, so.
And there's going to be a limit to how much the prices can go up in Flagstaff, in San Francisco, in New York, because you still have to, San Francisco is a great place to eat out, right? Great restaurants, all kinds of food. Someone has to be the cook, someone has to be the waiter, someone has to be the busboy. They have to live somewhere, right? And what I'm saying is, rents are going to stabilize in San Francisco, because eventually people are like, well, it's a great place to live, but all the restaurants are closed. I can't eat out anymore because there's no people to work there.
So that scenario happens in Sedona right now, or like in Aspen, where yep. the people who are actually working in that town have to drive in from a town over. They can't actually live in that town. So, you know, if it's, you know, an isolated city where there's no surrounding areas, then yeah, I think you might be able to get the price to level out. But as long as there's like some sort of area nearby where they, people can actually live that's affordable but commute, yep. I think you'll still have that problem.
I think San Francisco is particularly moving away from that, though, because the closest towns are getting too expensive. You know, Oakland is always, there's always going to be Oakland. People are going to come across the bridge from Oakland, which is kind of trash.
Well, and I think we're going to talk about AI, and that may be something that you see more automation, more artificial intelligence kicking in. But then, of course, where do people work if a robot, you know, takes over, if you get to that type of scenario, you know, going forward?
So actually, I'm glad you hit on AI. So the question I get a lot sometimes is, will AI take over all the jobs? And the answer is, no, it can't. Not even, you know, a realm of possibility, because you're going to buy a house from a robot. Are you going to have a
robot plumber?
You know, actually, there's that South Park episode where the handymans are like the most wealthy people in the world because no one knows how to do anything anymore. So they're paying them these absurd
real
prices.
Hands-on jobs. Yeah.
And so I think AI will replace a lot of entry-level jobs that can be automated or kind of mundane, but it's not going to replace everything. In fact, I think it will allow us to be more efficient and free up more time, which maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But I don't think it's going to replace all the jobs.
No, I think it's the horse and the buggy whip, you know, argument back in the day. You know, the automobile came along and the buggy whip people were like, oh, I'm going to go out of business. But how many other things did you get into because of efficiencies?
Yep.
You know, all of a sudden there's all these other industries. I think we're going to hold you over to talk more about AI and stuff like that, too. So we'll get into that. All right. If you guys got comments, go ahead and email talkwithjeff@icloud.com. Just to kind of wrap up the market side of this, though, Glenn. You and I want to get you guys both on the record. You both think there's still rate cuts coming.
Yep.
This year. I don't, but so it's 2-1. We'll see who wins. We'll put a wager on it.
Probably a rate cut. If not, they're going to talk about cutting the
rates. No, that's all they're doing.
They're just talking about it. That's enough to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, that's all they're doing.
For a little while.
Oh, we'll look at this in a little while, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more.
So there's actually videos where you can look at Jerome Powell giving a speech, and in real time, they also put up the markets. And depending on which word he says, the markets move, you know, one way or the other. And that's not a human doing. That's actually AI. But it goes to say every word that comes out of the Federal Reserve is very important because it affects so much of our lives, the monetary policy they do, and whether for good or for worse. I mean, it's you know, there's not much we can do about it unless we get rid of the Fed. But I think they're going to cut rates. I was actually thinking that back in September. I was thinking of last year, like, one, they're going to stop raising rates here soon.
Well, they definitely
next
do that.
Year, I think they'll start cutting rates.
So I think this is a disaster, though, for the housing market, because right now housing is starting to come down a little bit. Because the rates are so high, nobody can afford to buy. If they cut rates,
it's going to shoot the prices back up.
It's going to shoot the prices of the houses back up.
Yep. It's higher than they were before. Absolutely. Yeah. And so if you're
a homeowner, you're not going to cut rates.
Homeowner, good for you. If you own assets, if you own stocks, if you own real estate, great. In fact, if they cut rates, it'll actually cut one of the indirect mechanisms is people are no longer getting paid as much money to keep money in the bank. For example, like you can get 5% in the money market right now. Pretty not bad at all. But say they cut rates and now that money market's only paying 2%, but you still want to get 5%? Well, people are going to look and say, well, the stock market's going to be, you know, the opportunity for me to get that. So when they cut rates, it actually pushes more capital into the markets and actually, you know, allows more speculation or risk-taking because money's cheaper. Like Robert Kiyosaki has this question. He says, yeah, how much money would you borrow from me if I didn't charge you any interest? And the answer is as much as you'll give me, right?
So. Yeah. All right. Love to hear from you. Talkwithjeff@icloud.com. Hey, way you may be able to save some money. And I did this. Angela and I called up Eric Boatner at Allstate Insurance Agency. Eric and Lisa were able to save us quite a bit on our homeowners, on our automobile policies as well. They did a really good job. I think it's something you should look at. Like when I talk about getting your heater checked, this is something every year you should look at your insurance. insurance rates, because sometimes you get kind of stuck in the same groove, and then next thing you know, you're paying like 15 times the amount as where you start. I don't know if that's the actual number, but hey, it's gone up a lot. We're all seeing that out there. So call Eric Boatner, Allstate Agency, 928. Tell him I sent you to 928-774-8722. That's 928-774-8722. Back in a minute. Listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe, look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there, and on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
If you're looking to find out more about physical gold and silver, call Desert Gold Exchange. I've told you that I've been buying physical gold and silver for about a quarter century now. I look at it as an insurance policy, and things are crazy. The government spending's crazy. We've got huge debt numbers, huge deficit numbers. Why don't you deal with a company based right in Arizona, Desert Gold Exchange. Justin and his team, they do a great job of getting it delivered and answering all of my questions, and I know they'll do that for you as well. Tell them I sent you. Desert Gold Exchange, 888-852-4343. 888-852-4343. Go to desertgoldexchange.com. All right, that's it for today. I appreciate you all listening. And if you got any comments, I'd love to get it on tomorrow's show. I think we got Olivia coming back. She's been off the show for a little bit, especially since our trip. So she'll be here to bring some of your email and other comments. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com or leave a comment, 877-971-3971. Be back tomorrow. I hope everybody has a great, safe night. Take care. See you soon. The information provided on the Jeff Horvitz Show does not constitute legal, medical, financial, or tax advice. All information is the opinions of the host and guests. You should always seek the advice of a professional regarding any of these complex issues to make sure all circumstances of your situation are properly considered. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast, please give us a great review and also give us a comment in there. If you're not listening to the podcast, subscribe, look up the Jeff Horvitz Show. Also on video, Rumble, follow us there, and on YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate everyone who's done that.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
Hey, this is Jeff Horvitz, and if you're looking for a home for rent in the Flagstaff area, check out our full inventory of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes at flagstafforlease.com. That's Flagstaff, the number 4, lease.com. We also have office space available. A one-room suite goes for about $299 per month. Larger spaces are available. Go to flagstafforlease.com to check availability of our homes and office space for rent. FlagstaffForLease.com is an equal housing opportunity.